we can actually use what VCs have always talked about, which is the golden rule. And the VC golden rule is he who has the gold makes the rules. And for the first time now that we have access to this wealth, what do we really want in the world? What are the solutions we want in the world? What are the problems that are impacting our lives, Mina, that we can put our money behind and make returns and really own the agenda?
Hi, my name is Mina Kim, your host of The Click Line. I've worked on Wall Street for over 14 years. Then I built out Orange Theory Fitnesses and sold them to a private equity firm. And upon that exit, started investing in women and minority startups, as well as advising women who are getting divorced with financial consulting and strategy. Welcome to this episode of The Click Line. I'm very excited about this guest today. We have Trish Costello. She is internationally recognized for her pioneering work in educating and preparing venture capital investment partners through the prestigious Kauffman Fellows Program as co-founder and CEO emeritus. She's founder and CEO of Portfolia, of which I'm a proud investor of, which is a venture capital firm with over 165 investments across women's health and wellness, technology, green and sustainability, to name a few, with the largest network of women investors with over 2,000 investors across 50 states and over 20 countries. The list of accolades to her name is so long we could do another episode, but it would be a disservice if I didn't name a few. She's listed as top 30 women seed investor by Business Insider, Forbes 50 over 50, investor of the year, Springboard Enterprises and the New York Stock Exchange, 100 most innovative women entrepreneurs in the world by Entrepreneur Magazine, 100 most intriguing entrepreneur by Goldman Sachs, one of the top 10 most innovative finance companies by Fast Company, most innovative company run by women, Golden Stevie Award, 15 most innovative women entrepreneurs by Inc. Magazine, and as I like to call her, and she's also known as the godmother of venture capital, welcome to The Click Line, Trish.
Oh, well, thank you, Mina, and I'm a friend of Mina. So don't forget that one.
Yes. Yes. I am lucky to have her as a friend, and she's amazing. I love her. And I love everything that you're doing and that you've done in your career. A true icon, inspiration to all of the ladies out here. And for the young generation, you know, you should be looking up Trish and following her footsteps, because she has really paved the way for a lot of us to be sitting in these rooms and the future VC ladies out there. It's because of Trish that you may be entering this field and be inspired. So thank you for being here.
Well, you're too kind, but thank you for having me.
I just want to note too, so everyone knows, over 700 venture capital partners have come out of the Kauffman Fellows Program. So any of these big firms, small firms that you see in Silicon Valley, they've most likely come out of her program. So that's why she's called the godmother of venture capital. So how did you get into venture capital, Trish?
Well, Mina, I think that I'm one of these people that you would consider quite fortunate that I found my way into venture capital, because I do come from a small town in the middle of Kansas. I did not know what venture capital was, but I come from a very entrepreneurial family. And from the earliest days, we were building little companies, little operations to meet our own needs. And like many VCs, I did build a company in my 20s, was venture-backed. It was in the pediatric space. And, you know, had a nice company, had a nice exit. And, you know, it just became that, you know, virtuous circle that, you know, I made enough money that I could invest in other entrepreneurs. I don't even think the term angel investor, Mina, was really even known at that time. But, you know, we would just group together and back, you know, back our friends, very similar to how it is today. And then, you know, I started investing. Other people would say, well, I don't have time to do it, but I'll give you a little bit of my money. And in the early days, and that was in the late 80s, that's how venture really kind of got started. It was still a cottage business. And that was really the beginning. It was as that cycle of being an entrepreneur and supporting other entrepreneurs.
Amazing. And so as your career progressed, I'm sure you've seen so many cycles.
Yes.
How were the different waves and cycles, and where were there times where you're like, oh, I was ahead, I was on it, and then other times where you're like, oh, I kind of saw that coming from the side, but didn't really anticipate that. And how do you use that experience now in your investing?
Well, cycles are so important, Mina. You're so right. There are cycles within cycles, because you're looking at what's happening and the amount of money going to work overall, you know, and are you on an up cycle and prices are high and you need to be cautious, you know, or are you in a low cycle where, you know, there's a lot of sales to be had? And then you're looking at cycles of industries, you know, and what's happening right now. You know, we're looking at an AI cycle that, you know, is a little bubbly out there. And so, you know, specific industries, you know, are hot or not hot, and how you know, early were you into that, you know, that industry. So, you know, the practice of venture capital is just this very exciting space that is both based on a lot of data and then on your gut, you know, as far as where we are within that cycle and within that opportunity.
Right. And so also talking about investing and where the money is, there is huge talk of women and wealth and a large wealth transfer that's happening, staggering $30 trillion by 2030, transferring to women, and another $105 trillion by 2045. Women are increasingly recognized as a new face of wealth, yet they still get less than 2% of the VC funding. And female founders, I saw a stat, create 24% of exits with that small amount of funding, which is amazing. And women VCs are generating 35% higher returns. So there's two parts to this. Is, do you see women using, I like to say, the power of the purse and utilizing their wallet more and more? Is it the last like couple of years, the last decade? Are you seeing this transition starting to happen? And for women VCs, why do you think, and women founders, why do you think the industry players are having such a hard time recognizing their expertise?
Well, there are so many questions there, and this is so exciting and complex at the same time. So if we just look at women and wealth, you know, if we look at that piece first, you know, this is so interesting, because when I started Portfolia almost 10 years ago now, a lot of my thesis in creating Portfolia was all of this wealth that was moving toward women. And it really wasn't commonly known or understood. The bankers knew, you know, the demographers, you know, knew. And even when I got in and started looking at it 10 years ago, this had been going on for, you know, really since the 70s, where, you know, 0.25%, 0.5% more wealth a year being owned by women. and just, it's that really slow movement. You know, we talk about boiling the frog, you know, very, very slowly this money had been moving, you know, when women started entering the workforce, you know, getting college degrees, then getting the majority of college degrees, then becoming more and more successful. And so this has just been a very slow movement. At 10 years ago, we knew that we were going to be right at parity. And now we're at the place that you're talking about where we're looking at the horizontal wealth transfer, where $9 trillion between now and the end of in 2030 is moving to older women from the death of older spouses. And so, you know, we're going to see something, Mina, we've never seen before. And that is women over 50 will be, and likely are right now. The data has to catch up with us. But women over 50 are likely the wealthiest demographic in the U.S. today. It's probably never happened before because this confluence of women over 50 are so educated. They were that first generation to be able to take over corporate jobs and professions. And now, you know, living 7 to 9 years longer on average than the average age of their spouse, than their spouses. And so huge amounts of money. What are they going to do with it? And even when I saw 10 years ago, Mina, it's like if we don't activate when we have so much wealth for the first time, if we don't teach women or open them up to activate their capital behind new innovation and new companies that are being born, then we as a country are going to be less innovative because, you know, men have been doing this. But now that we take more wealth, we have to, just looking at it at a macro level, we have to enable women to activate their money around these innovations, or it will hurt us, you know, globally in innovation. But the next step down, the step that I love, is that, you know, we can actually use what VCs have always talked about, which is the golden rule. And the VC golden rule is, he who has the gold makes the rules. And for the first time now that we have access to this wealth, what do we really want in the world? What are the solutions we want in the world? What are the problems that are impacting our lives, Mina, that we can put our money behind and make returns and really own the agenda? And that's what I so love, is that we don't have to ask men who are 95% of the venture capital world. We don't have to go in with our hat in our hands and say, please invest in women's health. Please invest in active aging and longevity, or please invest in these green companies. What we can do is bring our friends together and really lay the agenda for ourselves.
Right. Yes. And that's what you're doing with Portfolio, which is why I was so excited to invest in Portfolio, because it really aligned with my values and the change that I wanted to see, and for future generations to be able to leave a legacy of, yes, I put my money where my mouth is. I put it to work in things that we want to really change the world with, that's going to align with women's rights, reproductive rights, with women's health. And I think that's so important. Why do you think, though, women have traditionally struggled to invest and use their wealth for the future of other, you know, the future generations, as far as in aligning with interests? Because I saw a McKinsey report that said 53% of assets controlled by women are currently unmanaged.
I believe that's the case, and I see it all the time, even within our own communities. I think it goes back to, you know, it goes back, let's just look at it, the recent history, right? It wasn't until the mid-80s that there was federal legislation giving women the right to, you know, full credit. You know, up until the 80s, if a woman in many states had her own business, she would have to have her husband co-sign for her to get a loan, or her father if she wasn't married. And Mina, I remember stories as a very young woman where women would tell me that they would have to have their sons sign for them if they were a widow.
No.
And so, yes. And so it's not that far. You know, it's within my my adult life that that was still the practice. And so if you look at that history, you know, if we weren't, if we didn't have access to our own money, or the ecosystem was not supporting us in that way, it's easy to understand that there's, you know, either a hesitation or a lack of understanding. You know, women could save money. You know, they could, you know, so if they had assets, you would save it. You didn't have that much, you know, the idea, or you would invest in something very safe. But the truth is, and what men know, the secret that men have always had is that, you know, you need a little risk to create wealth, and wealth, saving money, is not investing money. And so what we're able to do now is we're taking that next step where we're putting that money to work. We're embracing risk in a really smart way. And you see over and over when you compare, and you see it a lot in the public markets, and you know because of your background in finance as well, that you put men and women head to head, and women are usually going to outperform men. It may be slightly, but they're going to outperform men in financial performance, in investing performance. We're more patient. We do more homework. We invest in what we know rather than, you know, running after novelty. And so we're very good at investing. And so it's that's why it's such a great opportunity for us to activate them now and continue to give them the knowledge and confidence.
Right. And numbers don't lie. The numbers are out there. So you can fact check that. And so As people think about their venture capital allocation from their portfolio, you know, when I was coming up on the street, it was like, oh, you can't put too much into that. It's very high risk. And don't get me, disclaimer, it's high risk. There's a chance to make a lot or there's a chance to lose it. So putting that out there. But now more institutional investors are getting allocating larger percentage of their portfolio into venture, where it was like very, very little. And now it can be, you know, up to 10% of their portfolio, where it was like 2% or 1% before. And so they're the institutional investors, and when I say that, I'm referring to the large pension funds, the large corporates, the large insurance companies, the city and state-run pension funds who are really driving the market as from an investment standpoint because they have the huge $100 billion, you know, funds, right? $10 billion funds that they're writing big checks out of. Those investors, they're seeing the results and they're seeing that there's real returns and an opportunity to create alpha in their portfolio. And so as that has changed over time now I'm seeing more and more into women's health and topics like, and I have to be honest, I didn't even know the word perimenopause until a couple of years ago. And I was like, what is that? Because this is not anything we're taught. It's not something that was like, my mom has never talked to me about menopause. And so she wouldn't have sat me down and be like, listen, girl, this is what's going to happen in the future, right? And so all of these topics are coming to forefront. And so tell us a little bit about these topics like perimenopause, menopause, and how these companies are creating solutions for 50% of the population that wasn't there before.
It is so true, Mina. And, you know, we created at Portfolia, we created the first women's health venture capital fund, and that was in 2018. There had never been a venture capital fund focused in women's health. When I first established it, and as you mentioned earlier, I'm also the founder of Kauffman Fellows, which was the first training program for venture capital general partners. I was fortunate in that I have a very broad network across the world of venture capital leaders, that learned venture capital because of the organization that I created with the Kauffman Foundation. And so when I went to a number of them, back even 10 years ago now, I would have these great opportunities in women's health, and I would bring it to my friends to co-invest with me. And what I realized is that nobody believed that women's health was really an opportunity to invest, in which to invest. They would say women's health is a product. It's not a company. You know, you may have a women's health product, but you'll never build a company from it. There's never been a $1 billion company in women's health. People don't invest in women's health. It's just a little small niche. And I was looking at that, Mina, and I was going, for instance, menopause. And I thought, in that perimenopause phase myself. And I would think every woman on the planet will either go into menopause or she will have died before. And so this has to be an enormous market. And there have to be solutions. You know, there's so many issues that come out of not handling menopause well, and just the confusion around it. I mean, look at, you have bone loss, osteopenia, you have muscle loss, sarcopenia, you can go into, different dimensions and things if it's not. So there's so many outgrowths of this, heart health. And I thought this has to be an enormous market. But Mina, it was invisible to everybody. And you look at all of the other parts. The only thing that wasn't invisible were period trackers. And venture capital liked period trackers because they were looking for data plays. How do I get information? And a family with a new baby spends a lot of money, so this is going to give me information. But even with that, they weren't thinking about women's health. They were thinking about who's buying all of those cribs and supplies and things. So that was at the time when I really started going in and documenting the size of this marketplace and looking at all of the outgrowth of the companies that would be out there, and realized that the fact that only 5% of healthcare venture capitalists were men was the source of the problem. They didn't see it. And we can look at everything. They weren't having mammograms. They weren't having pap smears. They weren't having babies, in the same way that we were. They weren't going through menopause. And I thought, this is that beautiful opportunity that's enormous, that seems to be hiding in plain sight. And that's why we created the first Women's Health Fund in 2018. We've now had 5 women's health funds, 3 pure women's health, 2 active aging and longevity, with the focus on women's health, so the 50 and above. And it has become today, now in 2025, just 7 years later, one of the most, the fastest growing healthcare market of anything in healthcare, one of the fastest growing in venture capital overall. A Portfolia itself has $2 billion plus companies, and every healthcare VC is looking to have at least two or three deals in their portfolio to be a well-invested fund. So it's almost like overnight, it would look like to many. Now, we've worked really hard to create that industry, and I could talk more about that, but it's it's really just it's almost an amazing case study of taking an industry from nothing.
Right. And so what are some of the top health, women's health topics that are being addressed right now with some of the companies that you're seeing?
Oh, my. Well, we work, you know, we work in everything from the most mundane and private issues like bladder control, you know, or sexual dysfunction, you know, up to all of the major cancers that women are impacted by, and every developmental cycle from, you know, first periods to, you know, fertility to reproductive health to, you know, babies, you know, through menopause, you know, all the way through, you know, our health cycle, you know, our life cycle. But one of the big changes from the first years is that we were focused only on things that were directly women's organs functioned, you know, just directly things that made us women. What we found in these subsequent funds is that we expanded to conditions that impact us differently as women or impact us disproportionately. You know, so examples of that are, again, dementia. You know, men and women both get dementia, but women are impacted by it differently. Men and women, you know, may have bone loss or muscle mass loss, but it impacts women differently.
Right. Like both of those, women have much higher cases of dementia and bone loss than males.
Yes. And it has a lot to do with our hormones, but it really is a different, it has to be treated differently. Heart attacks, heart health. So I believe it was it McKinsey that did a study recently that found that even 40% of cardiologists don't fully understand how women present differently with heart attacks versus men. And so these things are, you know, part of the issue is that we've not had the same amount of money put into researching women versus men. And it, you know, it's only really been 10 years where the federal government was doing studies splitting out men and women and really looking at the difference. Before that, Mina, they thought of women as small men. And we know now how laughably foolish that is. But at the time, it wasn't clear. It wasn't clear the differences, you know, that so many things are different in women than men. And so now a lot of the research is really bearing that out. And it's everything from pharma to devices to therapeutics. Everything needs to be different for women. And our lives were compromised. I mean, women have had shortened lives because, you know, all the research was on men. And that's now changing. Now, one of the things that I think is good news about where we're at today is, you know, we were trying to put, you know, millions, billions of dollars into research to try to catch up. AI is catching up for us. AI is able to take data, right, and just churn through so much of the data that's out there and make sense of it. Make sense of it in practice and make sense of it in new solutions. So in some ways, we're going to be able, I believe, going to be able to catch up even with the lack of, you know, some of the original research. And, you know, I'm seeing that. One of the companies that I see that with right now is in a company called Mervy. So preeclampsia, huge issue for women. That's what we die when we die of childbirth. It's usually from preeclampsia or going into full eclampsia. Women of color.
What is that exactly? What is preeclampsia?
Preeclampsia is when our blood pressure just goes sky high while we're pregnant. And then, you know, you're more likely to have strokes or other kinds of adverse outcomes from blood pressure just, you know, going off the charts. And it's has been very difficult to predict up until now. I had 35 years ago, I had twin daughters. and I got preeclampsia. One of those twin daughters was a mother, had her first child 4 years ago. She had preeclampsia. My mother before had preeclampsia, and we were all basically treated in the same way. The standard of practice had really not advanced much. Women of color, regardless of education or even their fitness level, are more likely to have preeclampsia and to die in childbirth. There was a famous situation where for relay runners, Olympic relay runners, all Black women ended up within the few years after the Olympics. They were, award winners at the Olympics. Within a few years, three of them had children, and one of them died, and two of them almost died from preeclampsia. So even at that level of fitness. And so now we have a company that has been able to predict with pinpoint accuracy who will suffer from preeclampsia. Mervy is the name of the company. But it's because they've been able to take AI and take all the data that's out there about childbirth and utilize that to be completely accurate and to reach those women earlier. So that's the kinds of solutions that are coming forward. It's across every facet of our healthcare that we're enhancing and changing and customizing for women.
Right. And you mentioned bone loss before, and I know osteoporosis is a huge issue and muscle loss. We lose 10% every decade. And osteoporosis, particularly in Asian women, is really high. I read a statistic. What are you seeing in companies that are addressing this issue?
Well, that's one of my favorite companies that's out there that we invested in at a pre-seed stage, so very early, before they had really even jumped into the science. The company is called OsteoBoost, and they took, this is one of the top stories that I really enjoy. What they found out in the space program at NASA is that the biggest problem for astronauts that were in space for months at a time was bone loss. Yet they couldn't do, a lot of weight-bearing exercise, in space. So they needed to create a device, and they created a belt that astronauts could wear that would vibrate on their sacrum, and it enabled them to maintain their bone mass when they were up in space.
Amazing.
So a brilliant entrepreneur decided, well, if they're using that for astronauts, maybe we could use that for women, to enable them not to lose bone mass as they age. And sure enough, fast forward a couple of years, and we put some of the first money into the company, OsteoBoost, and not only turned it into a viable product, but took it all the way through FDA clearance to prove that it actually would maintain bone mass. The good news is you and I are talking about osteoporosis, but there's something before osteoporosis, and it's called osteopenia. And that's the very early stages of losing bone mass. And Mina, it can happen in your 30s. It's in your late 30s that it really starts happening, but there was no solution because the drugs that they were giving people had all kinds of negative consequences to them. And they had black box warnings. So you couldn't look any earlier. You had to wait until it was serious. Well, OsteoBoost, the belt, OsteoBoost, has now been approved for osteopenia. So we have a product that actually will keep us from going into osteoporosis with the bone loss and the possibility of breaking your hip or getting hunched over, all of the problems. And that was one, I'm so glad you mentioned it because it was one of those pernicious problems that, again, for decades, there had been no movement on. And now we have a product that, again, you wear. There's no bad outcomes from being able to wear the belt. You need to wear it 3 to 4 times a week for 30 minutes. And you can walk with it on. You can take your dog for a walk. You can, garden, you can do anything, and it will help you maintain your bone mass. And that's that kind of solution that we continue to seek for every problem that we have.
And so how do they detect if you're starting to deteriorate in bone density?
So there are things called DEXA scans that actually will go in, you know, and almost like an X-ray that will let you, that can go in and see how dense your bones are. And they've always known that it started early, but they would tell you to drink milk and take vitamin C and D and, you know, all these different things, which we do. But it wasn't enough for some people, especially, as you said, Asian women, petite women, smaller women really have are impacted by this. And so to be able to go in with these, you know, these solutions that will prevent, you know, not treat it later, but, you know, but that can prevent it from the beginning, are what we want for women in so many of these areas.
Right.
You know, I look at endometriosis. Let's talk about 11% of all women are impacted by endometriosis. Very, very painful, usually during your period. And so 11% of women are impacted. It takes 8 years on average to diagnose.
What is it exactly?
Endometriosis is when your menstrual fibers move outside of the you know, your sexual organs and kind of implant into other areas of your body. Highly painful. And the only way, the reason it took 8 years, is the only way to diagnose it was surgery. And so they would wait and wait and wait and wait. And the other part is women don't get a lot of respect around pain. And, you know, there's a lot of things that are happening around that we're hearing about now. But, you know, people would say oftentimes the pain and endometriosis will start in your teens. And people will say, oh, my gosh, she's such a complainer. She's got cramps and she just won't get out of bed, you know. And the truth is that, again, 1 in 10 of us are suffering from endometriosis, which is a terribly painful thing that can mask as just bad cramps. But it causes infertility over time if it's not treated. And so there's now a solution, Herobia, another one of our companies, that enables testing, you know, immediate testing to be able to diagnose endometriosis. It's going to change our lives. You're not going to have women suffer from this, you know, for years, and you're not going to have their fertility harmed. So, you know, there's just so many areas like this.
How young can you be to get tested? Is it like as soon as you get your period?
Yes, yes. And they are, and this has been within the last year. You know, these new, what's so exciting about being able to put our money together to work in venture capital is that there's all of this work happening in the lab. But to take it from the lab and really get it into testing and get it to the market, you have to have fuel, right? You have to have the money to put in this because, you know, the small team at the laboratory, you know, they're seeing new things that are happening and ways that they can use new medical technology or discoveries. But it takes millions of dollars to get those through testing and then to turn it into a product and get the message out to us. And so if women aren't at the table as either venture capitalists or the investors, oftentimes that doesn't happen. I have a company right now, invested in them early. So we've been investing in them for years, but they're dealing with using vibrational medicine for pain management. They originally focused on fibromyalgia because it's one of the most difficult pains to, you know, be able to overcome and treat. And this team happened to be run by a male CEO, this company. And a couple years later, he came to me and he said, Trish, I thought fibromyalgia was the perfect space because the pain is so intense and there is no solution. But he said, what I realized is that so few people really understand women's pain that I would have been better off if I would have done sports injuries, because men understand sports injuries. And it just really emphasized to me how at a disadvantage we are and how our work is changing that. So now it is a solution for fibromyalgia, and it is a solution for PTSD in treating vets and others, and it is a solution for sports medicine. But if our money hadn't gone in first, it wouldn't have been available to women. So we're making a difference every day. We together, and you know, at Portfolia, you can invest $10,000 into one of our venture funds. You know, it's a small minimum, but that $10,000 by thousands of women equates to changing our lives. It equates to changing our lives, and you get a return on it.
And you get a return on it. And we want to have our money work for us, right? So we don't want to just be spending money out there or saving it and keeping it in a 0.1% savings account. We want the money to compound and work for us, because even now more than ever, right? I had a wealth manager on, and we were talking about, what is the number for retirement? Like, is it 24 times, you know, your yearly expenses? And what does that look like over time? But now with anti-aging and longevity that is going rocket speed right now, there's a real possibility of living past 100. And if that does happen, then we do need to keep investing in every vintage year in multiple products in order to keep getting returns and compounding our money and make the money work for us.
Well, you started off by talking about those institutions, and I can tell you, every professional institutional investor has an allocation for venture capital. I mean, they would be laughed out of the business if they didn't. It's just that important. And it's really the first time, just been in the last, five or six years, that women could really, or men, could actually have allocations to venture capital like this. And, men have invested for years because it's enjoyable, because it is exciting to be on the hero's journey with these great entrepreneurs, but because the returns, there's outsized returns. Now, you have to diversify. And as you said, it is risky. And there are some years where, you know, it's just everything, the environment, you know, can be really difficult, or the markets are down, or there's chaos in the markets. But what the experts know is that if you invest in top venture funds, you diversify across those funds, you don't put all your money in one, and maybe even do a few individual investments, which you can also do at Portfolia. But that's the real opportunity to create wealth with those innovative new companies.
Right. Yes, exactly. And so, you know, for myself, I have a portfolio which has stocks and bonds, typical allocations. I have my own separate trading account that I call it my whip it around fund, just for fun, that I do some thematic plays on. And then I have my VC, you know, allocation, and I love Portfolia. I'm in about a dozen SPVs, I think, a couple of funds. And that's kind of how I'm viewing the investment universe right now. And I think that every year I have to be allocated to some sort of vintage year every year, because you never know what each year is going to be. And the best way to diversify is not only different industries, but also different years. So I think that's how people should start thinking about it and put your money to work. And like Trish said, you can get in for as low a minimum as $10,000. Of course, you have to qualify to be able to invest in venture capital. But if you're able to, I think it's a great way to be part of something extraordinary, doing groundbreaking technology and science that I'm very, very excited about. And I will tell you, I've been to portfolio conferences. The amount of excitement and camaraderie among the women investors, and that we're all on the same mission and all of our values are aligned. We're all there for the common interest of wanting to see change in the topics and industries. And that alignment is like a bond that's so amazing. And I have made so many friends that we still keep in contact with. And, you know, I will have standing calls with certain people I've met in New York, and I will, you know, text with whoever who's still around and meet up in San Francisco or if they're in LA. So I just love what you built, Trish. And I just want to tell you that too, because I think that you should know that it's amazing, this network that you've built for everyone.
Well, it's so exciting to be a part of it, because the truth is it's all of our members' money, their investments that they're putting together. And then we're able on their behalf and with them to, you know, put that money to work and back these companies. And, you know, really every woman in Portfolia is a pioneer in their own right. You know, we're still the early trailblazers on this, telling the story. So many women don't understand that they can be a part of investing like this and be a part of these companies. It's still just like our companies are new and creating new innovations. Portfolia itself is creating this as a new innovation, a new way for us to invest. You know, oftentimes we think of, you know, the finance world is almost organic. The way it's been done for years is the only way it can be done. But the truth is, we can demand that it work for us in the way we like to operate and the way we want to think and the areas in which we want to invest. And you're a good example of that, you know, a perfect example of being able to, you know, take a step back and say, no, I want to do it my way. I want it to reflect me and my values.
Yeah. And so to conclude, as you know, the name of the podcast is Clickline, When Everything Clicks. So when was there a moment in your personal or professional life where all of a sudden things clicked for you?
It's funny. I was at a TED Talk. It was a TED Talk it was a women's TED in San Francisco. I had just moved to San Francisco, and I was feeling a little frustrated that I was investing, but the kind of companies I wanted to back, I couldn't get the community around me. And that's when I heard about the new demographics of wealth. And Mina, that was 10 years ago. And then all of a sudden, it's when it all came together for me. And I thought, we don't have to ask permission. You know, we see the need. We can step up ourselves. We have the resources. And it all came together for me. And I could almost see in my mind's eye a picture of how we could operate together, how we could create a new kind of venture fund. It just became visual to me at that moment. And it took a couple of years to create it, but the vision was solidified in a blink of an eye. It was in a click that I saw it.
Divine intervention, it all lined up. I love that. Great. Well, thank you so much for being on, Trish. I am so grateful to you. I appreciate you. And I'm so happy that you had the time to be able to be on the Click Line.
Well, best of success with your podcast, and the energy you bring to everything, Mina, is just moves everyone. So good luck and congrats.
Thank you.
I'll see you soon.
Don't forget to send in your questions and comments to the Click Line. And one more thing, the views and opinions expressed on this podcast are for informational and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered professional advice. Please consult with qualified professionals for advice related to your specific situation.